Hey, everybody. It's your girl, Reason to Smile. If you're listening now, I assume you have listened to the first episode, which is a quick intro on who I am. Well, not really who I am, but why I'm doing this podcast and what I hope to get out of it. And then into the second episode, which is what I'm titling Fertility 101, which talks about what is fertility, some of our early struggles, including IUIs that we went through, and a little bit, just a taste of a story about our IVF journey. So if you've made it this far, thank you. You're already at episode 3. You're pretty much an OG at this point, and I appreciate your support. Today, what I wanted to do was continue on in that fertility conversation and talk a little bit about the next steps. And next steps for us are IVF, or in vitro fertilization, which everyone has kind of heard about and familiar with, at least on the high level. As we talked about, so many women and so many families, men, women, are experiencing infertility. It's way more common than anyone probably thought until recently, with some of the statistics saying 1 in 7, potentially 1 in 8. Still, that's a lot of women that are going through this problem. And those of you guys who are going through it out there, you're not alone. If not anyone else, if no one else tells you that today, I myself have that same struggle, and am working past it, and believe that God will expand our family, and that I am not barren, and that I will produce, and that I will have a healthy baby and a safe pregnancy and all of that good stuff. So, just to kind of pick up where we left off. So started our journey, did several 5 to 6 of the IUIs, were not successful, switched clinics, at a new clinic, have decided we want to go on the IVF. So all fine and dandy, went through meeting with the financial counselor, and I talked a little bit about that. We were able to do a program in which you pay one flat fee, and that includes 2 egg retrievals, which I'll talk about a little bit, and an unlimited amount of transfers for the eggs that you get from those retrievals. So IVF is actually broken into 2 stages or 2 parts. And it's really defined as a 2-part program or procedure if you're doing what they call a frozen transfer. And I'll talk a little bit about that. So the first part of IVF is that egg retrieval. And so what that is that they're going to give you medicine, hormones, both by pill as well as injections, to get your body to produce as many eggs that can reach to maturity as possible. So a little bit of education about our bodies is that every month a woman has her cycle, she will typically ovulate, and a egg will come out. And that egg will either be fertilized, meaning she's pregnant, or it will not be fertilized, and then her period will come and the lining will shed in her uterus. So that process is typically 1 egg per month. Now, sometimes women ovulate more than 1 egg, and that's how you get fraternal twins. Sidebar, if they're identical twins, that means 1 egg, 1 sperm, and that egg split. Now, that's why it has the same exact DNA, because it started out as 1. But if you ovulate more than 2 eggs, both of those get fertilized. Boom, you get fraternal twins. Shout out to my twin sisters, Nikki and Vicky, because I do have little sisters that are a set of fraternal twins. So my mom ovulated 2 eggs that month, and both eggs were fertilized. So again, in a normal month, you will have an egg. That egg will either be fertilized or not. In hopes that the egg will be fertilized, your body starts preparing and your uterus, the lining of it, starts to thicken up. So I equate it to, like, it's kind of cold in the house and you're trying to get warm, so you have all of your cozy fuzzy blankets, and that's what your uterus starts to do. It starts to grow these cozy fuzzy blankets for the egg and sperm to meet, have an embryo, fertilize, implant into that uterine wall, and then grow into a baby. When your body realizes you are not pregnant and there is no baby there, that thick, cozy comforter needs to come off and shed because you're not pregnant. And that's when you have a period, and that's the blood that comes out, and sometimes the clotting and all of that. That, again, is the lining of your uterus. So in IVF, because you want to have a baby, 1 egg is not enough. That's not great chances. So they put you on these hormones, and they try to get as many eggs as possible. And those hormones, just to kind of talk about again, a big part of this step is really taking medicine that is done via injection. So these are injections you do yourself or your partner does, and you do them for several weeks leading up to this step. For us, we were on a couple of different medicines, and this is called the stimulation phase. So we were on Gonal F as well as Menopur were the two big ones. And we're on those for several weeks. Go to the doctor. You have a lot of monitor appointments where they check your blood levels and check all of your hormone levels. And then you also have a ton of ultrasounds. So you're doing this for like 2 weeks, and then you get to a point where you're going in like literally every day. And every check, they're adjusting your dosage. So you can go for one visit and they're like, oh, they're not growing at the right speed. Or maybe one of the eggs is super big and one's super small. And so what they do is they adjust your medicine. So several times throughout our cycle, my medicine would go up, particularly the Menopur. And this is like being a nurse, like no medical training. You're at home mixing different medicines together and then injecting yourself. So it's pretty intense. Thankfully, during this phase, these are subcutaneous shots. So these are shots that do not go into muscle, but go into fat. And really what you do is you pinch skin around your belly area and you inject it. It's not the worst, but anything that you're doing pain-wise, some people just have an aversion to needles, and so it's bad. There could be some stinging or just injection site pain. So if you just think about getting a shot or whatever, and having that done every single day, multiple times a day, depending on how many different medicines you are, it's pretty intense. So as your eggs start to grow, they want as many of them to be mature for retrieval as possible. So what that means is they need your eggs to grow kind of at the same rate. And so ideally what they're trying to do is get mature eggs that are around 22 millimeters in size. So you can't have one be at a 22 and one at like a 4, because 4 is not mature. So you would get one good one, but the 4 one would be a dud. So you're trying to get all of them to grow at the same pace. So you really want a cluster effect with them. And so, like I said, you're doing these meds for like 2 weeks. You're going in your first visit. They're going to count to see how many follicles there are, which follicles will hopefully produce an egg. So you can assume that your follicle is what's going to produce an egg. And they're measuring the size of those and then adjusting your medicine. So you're doing that, get to the point where you're doing it like every day or every other as you get very close. For me, we were on stimulation medicines for 15 days, which is on the longer side. I've heard of some people 10 days, I think 2 weeks is really kind of like the average, right around that 12 to 14. We did it for 15 days. It comes to the point where you have so many eggs in this small little area that's used to only having one, and they're all of hopefully substantial size, that those ultrasounds can be intense. Like, it's not a pain, but it's an extreme discomfort, because if you can picture in your uterus just all these things that are like sizes of marbles, and they're trying to press around and feel around and see how many you can see. So it's kind of cool because you get all of these like checkpoints in. You get to see exactly where your eggs are, what sizes they are. I mean, like, I have my notebook where I would write down like left side, 5 follicles, sizes 20, 9, 19. And like, I'd write down everything. And so you would get this like reassurance that, oh great, like, wow, this is working. And then they would eventually, when they get to the right size and there's a good number, and they don't want them to get too big to where you've kind of missed that window, they schedule your egg retrieval. So our egg retrieval was on August the 9th. And that was like the big day. So you've been doing all of these hormones, you have all of this working up, you're ready to go in there, and you want as many eggs as possible. So pretty easy procedure. They do put you to sleep. We did ours during COVID. So unfortunately, my husband couldn't be there. So I was there by myself. Went to sleep for a little bit, probably only like a 30 minute, even that procedure, where they go in with a thin catheter and they actually, I forget what the word is called, escaped my mind, but they actually aspirate and take the liquid and the eggs out. that day you find out how many eggs you have. And we found out that we had 11 eggs, which is a great number. Because again, in a month, you basically get one. So we had basically 11 months of eggs in one shot. So we were super, super, super excited. And at that point, you're waiting 24 hours to find out how many of those eggs will actually fertilize with the sperm. And then there's several kind of toll gates after that. So we had 11. The next day we got the news that of the 11, 10 of those were mature, meaning they were the right size, and of maturity, you can only get a baby from a mature egg, and that all 10 had fertilized, meaning the sperm had met up with the egg and they did their thing, which is really good because there is what they call the hunger game effect when it comes to egg retrieval. And that's at every stage, typically your number will go down by half. So if you have 11 eggs retrieved, then they would say 5 to 6 of those would actually be fertilized. But in our case, of the 11, 10 were fertilized, and 10 were fertilized what they would refer to as conventionally. So when it comes to fertilization, you can actually just kind of picture a petri dish where you put the egg and you put the sperm, and you're kind of like bringing a friend to a party and introducing them to another friend and hoping they do their thing. Or you can do something that's very popular in IVF, which is ICSIs. And that's where you actually inject the sperm into the egg so that you know they meet up and do their thing. So instead of just having your friends meet at a party, it's like you introduce them in a bedroom and they're naked and like, here you go. And it's taking that step out. Our doctor decided not to do ICSI. We were perfectly fine to do it if she advised to do that, but she didn't. She didn't think we needed it, and they fertilized conventionally. So 11 becomes 10, and then becomes the waiting game. IVF is full and full and full and full of waiting games. So at this point, you wait 5 days. And that's to see if this fertilization, this egg that's now fertilized with the sperm, grows into what they're looking for, which is a blastocyst. And this is because we are doing a frozen transfer. And there's doctors who have different opinions on which one is going to be more successful. You can do a fresh, which means the embryo is never frozen. It goes, as soon as it becomes an embryo, it's implanted inside of you. And that can either be like 3 days after your egg retrieval, or it could be 5 days, or you could do a frozen, and that's where you actually get your embryos, put them on ice, and then come back and do the transfer where you implant them. One of the benefits of doing it frozen is that you give your body time to come down from the crazy hyperstimulation that you have gone through for the egg retrieval, because you're like jacked up on hormones and all crazy. It gives your body time to just come back down and get to a more natural state in hopes that that would increase your odds of success in becoming pregnant. So my doctor advised that we should do a frozen. So we went and did a frozen. So again, August 9th, we have 11 eggs. We realize the next day that 10 of those are mature, all 10 fertilized, and then we wait to see how many grow into a 5 day. And so that whole week, you're just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Because again, the more eggs you get, the more embryos, the higher your chances, because you have kind of more to play with. We get the call that of the 10, 3 made it to the infamous day 5 blastocyst. So again, we knew that the Hunger Games effect, that it goes down by half. So not surprising at all that the 10 became 3, given we had like no fall off from the 11. So we have our 3 embryos, and next step for us is that we are going to get them genetically tested. So this is something that's optional, and I think it's kind of crazy that it's optional. Me personally, if you're going to go through IVF and all of the time, the effort, the money, the emotional roller coaster that you're on, I don't know why they don't require the embryos to be genetically tested, because this is one of the easiest ways to increase your odds of success, is to make sure that what you're putting back in your body is a normal, healthy embryo. As you get older, your egg quality diminishes, And this is one of the main reasons people go through IVF is that it's older people. Now, that's not always the case. And when I say older, I'm talking like 35 plus. So I don't really mean older in the sense of like AARP, just older in the sense of reproductive health. So again, that 35 mark is a huge milestone. So your egg quality going down, it's really important that the embryo is genetically healthy, because you don't want to put something inside of you that is not, because one, it's most likely not going to implant. That's kind of God's way and nature's way and your body's way of ridding out the duds, so to speak. So you're not even going to get pregnant. If you do, your body is most likely going to miscarry, because we are built that way, to kind of be self-sufficient, and our body will clean up, I'm using air quotes, mistakes. Or let's say you actually make it to the point of delivery, you could have a kid with a disability or some sort of physical condition. So like Down syndrome would be the most popular. I don't know if popular is the right word to use, but the most prevalent when it comes to that. So one of the statistics, and this is kind of why I'm harping on this one, that our doctor has shared with us, is after the age of 40, it's like 90% of your eggs are genetically abnormal. Something crazy like that. And I'll have to look up the actual statistic. But it's some super high number after the age of 40. So it's like, if most of my eggs are going to have a problem, why would I not test it to make sure what I'm putting in is a healthy baby, a healthy embryo, so that my ultimate goal of getting a healthy baby is achieved? So we decided to do what's referred to as PGA testing. So this is genetically testing the embryo to test for the known abnormalities. So like all of the Down syndrome, chromosome abnormalities, lots of different things that they test for. It's not 100% guaranteed that you wouldn't have some sort of something happening, but they test for all of the common. So it's like making sure again that you do just one extra step. And I feel very strongly that if you're gonna go through all of this, they should require it and include it in the plan pricing, so that you are increasing your odds as most as possible to have a healthy baby at the end, because that's what we all want. So then after waiting this period of time, you send your embryos off to be genetically tested. They actually like they biopsy a piece of tissue and send it to the site like by FedEx, which is kind of crazy. And you have to wait 2 weeks. So this is something you don't go through if you're doing a fresh transfer, because you don't have that time. You're immediately going. But again, one of the benefits of frozen is that you can have that period for your body to kind of regulate itself back down. And you have that time to do genetic testing. So we wait 2 weeks to find out what happened. We know we have 3 embryos. We're sending them there. We wait 2 weeks. We get the results. Of the 3, 2 are genetically healthy. So we're like, okay, that's really good odds. Like we like those odds. We would have loved to have all 3 be genetically healthy, but we totally understand. And I'm just trying to see through my notes of what the abnormality was with the 1. Because I believe, I believe it was missing like chromosome 7 or something like that. But anywho, we knew that 1 was abnormal. So now we have 2 embryos. We put those suckers on ice because we're waiting for my body to regulate itself back down, and we are waiting to go to the next steps. So that's kind of the first part of the process. So what we refer to when we say the retrieval part of the process. Now we need to go to the transfer part of the process. So there is a gap between the two. And during that period, again, you're letting your body regulate itself back down. You're getting ready with your doctor to prepare for this. So you're starting, typically you're starting with birth control pills, which seems very odd for someone who's trying to have a baby to do anything with birth control pills. But you start those for about 2 weeks, because that helps make sure your body starts to get back down to normal as far as your eggs go. And for us, our frozen transfer date was September 22nd. So again, August the 9th, we do the retrieval, and then September 22nd, we do the transfer. So during the transfer, you go in, you're not put to sleep during this. This is very similar to an IUI in which they take a catheter and then they actually transfer the embryo into your uterus. And it's like a fully baked embryo. And what they're hoping for is that it implants and that it becomes a healthy baby. So leading up to this, what you're doing is you're taking more hormones again. You're taking estrogen, which is typically a pill that you're taking. And then you're taking what most people refer to as like the IVF booty shot, which is progesterone in oil that's injected into your, not really your butt, it's kind of like the top, like a muffin top of your booty. And that's the one most people know about because that's the one that's painful and it's also in the booty. It's a intramuscular shot, so it has to go into the muscle and that's why it goes into the booty versus the rest of the drugs I talked about for the stimulation phase were subcutaneous and went into the belly. So you start taking that progesterone and that estrogen before your actual transfer date to get your body ready. So leading up to the transfer, you have more doctor's appointments, but they're not as much as you have during the stimulation phase. So the stimulation phase, you may go to the doctor 10 times in that, you know, 3-4 week window. During the frozen transfer, you're gonna actually go in for what they would call baseline, where they're gonna do blood work and they're gonna do an ultrasound just to make sure everything looks like your body is completely back to normal and that you're good. And then you will take birth control pills again for 2 weeks. And then you will actually go in and do a uterine lining check. And that's to make sure your lining looks nice and fluffy and is nice and cozy for the transfer to happen and for the baby to implant. So at this point, you have stopped your birth control after 2 weeks and you've started your estrogen pills. And then after they verify that your uterine lining looks good, you're gonna start the very next day on your progesterone and oil shots. And it's actual oil, so it's very thick, which is another reason the shots hurt. The needle's long and thick, and it just becomes a pain to, like, some people have trouble sitting down. There's lots of articles and posts and things on how to make it bearable, like heating pads or different type of self-injectors. For us, I started off giving myself the shot, but you can imagine kind of trying to rotate your body around and do it was really difficult. And so I went to then my husband doing it and it felt so much better. So as hard as it was for me to relinquish the power, because I'm a little bit power hungry, and it feels better for me to give myself the shot, which instead of relying on him, it really made all the difference to have him do it. So you start that off and you do that all the way through the transfer and then until you do your pregnancy test. So you have the transfer, you go in, it's a quick procedure, you're not asleep. They just use the catheter, implant the embryo, wham bam, thank you ma'am, you're on your way. The hardest part with the transfer is that in order to get the catheter in, they need your bladder to be super, super full. And the reason for that is when normally you're getting an ultrasound for this process, during this, they can't, and when I say an ultrasound, it's not what you would expect, like from watching Grey's Anatomy. It's not a normal pregnancy ultrasound where it's on top of your belly. In this process, the ultrasound is done transvaginally, meaning like it's actually inside of your vagina. But they can't use a transvaginal ultrasound wand because they have the catheter in there and they're putting the embryo. It's like there's only so much room in your uterus, or at least in most people's uteruses. So they need to be able to do it what you're probably picturing, where you see the jelly on the belly and they're going through the belly. And in order to have a clear picture of your uterus, your bladder has to be super full. And I mean super full. Like you have to drink anywhere between 32 ounces going into it to like 60. And I mean, it's to the point where you think you're going to pee yourself, because not only is your bladder so full and you can imagine how bad you have to pee, but they're also inside of that same area poking and prodding around to put the catheter and to put the embryo. So it's like, whoa, too much. You definitely stories of mishaps and things. So that's kind of the most difficult part about it, is having a full bladder. Afterwards though, and the procedure, I mean, you're awake, it's very simple. You drive yourself wherever you need to go. All they ask that you do is really kind of take it easy the next couple of days, because what you're hoping happens is that your body is receptive, and that embryo implants, and that you become pregnant. And so during this period, you're not allowed to have sex. You're not even have sex. Like, you couldn't even masturbate if you wanted to, because you can't have an orgasm, because that would have like convulsions in your uterus, and you don't need anything that would potentially keep this embryo from implanting. So you're basically supposed to chill. You can't go to the gym. You can't do any sorts of workouts. Because again, you don't want anything. What this process you went through was so intense that you don't want to do anything that would jeopardize the chances. So that was tough, because you can't work out. From that period, you're what they call pregnant until proven otherwise. So you're not drinking, you're not having caffeine, which most of the time during this whole process, you're not supposed to do anyway, or at least limit it. All of the things that you would think of if you were pregnant, right? Like, you're not smoking, you're not doing drugs, all of that good stuff. And then this is the super hard part. You have to wait 2 weeks and then go in for a pregnancy blood test. Those 2 weeks are like torture. I mean, you're like every little thing that you feel move, you're like, oh my God, is that it? Did the baby just implant? Is that not it? What did it do? And you're like all over the place. Lots of things in old wives' tale about how to increase your chances of getting pregnant, from drinking pomegranate juice to McDonald's French fries right after transfer is a cool wives' tale. Eating pineapple and the core of it every day for the next 5 days. Making sure you always have socks on, because you don't want any of the blood to have to go to your feet because you're cold. You want it all around your uterus. Lots of old wives' tales. One of the things we also did during this period, speaking of blood, is that acupuncture is something that is really supposed to help with the success rates of IVF, because acupuncture increases your blood flow, and that will help as you're trying to get the baby implant in your uterus. So for our transfer, we did about 6 weeks of acupuncture, either once a week or twice a week. And it was definitely interesting. It did not hurt, but I was really surprised of the places they put the needles and how your body is connected. And then for this particular protocol, there's a particular IVF protocol, they actually hook up a machine that shocks the needles. So not only do you have needles in you, they are then shocking you with an electrical current. Like, it's nothing you would ever think you would pay someone to do. It's not that bad, and it can be very, very relaxing. So anyone who's going through this process and wants to know, like, what can I do other than supplements and eating right and all of the good things for your body, acupuncture is something I would definitely recommend, because it really increases the chances. And then it also just helps with the stress level, and just kind of keeping you at peace if you can be at peace. So during this period of time, you're really just waiting to find out if you're pregnant. So we had our transfer on the 22nd, and then waited the 2 weeks, went in for our blood pregnancy test, and we were really good. We didn't do any at-home pregnancy test. It was really important to me to really just be trusting and to just believe that I was pregnant. And so no at-home testing, was really just relying on the doctor test. So going 2 weeks, it's a little less than 2 weeks. I think it was actually 12 days. Transfer was on a Wednesday. We went not the following Wednesday, but the the Monday after that for a pregnancy test. And then you're just waiting the few hours. They don't tell you immediately. You have to wait for your doctor to actually call you and give you the results. So you go in bright and early, like sometimes as early as 7:30 in the morning, and then you're waiting until they give you a call. My doctor typically calls around 3. So got the great news that we were actually pregnant and that this worked. And then we were just over the moon excited. Like, it was our very first retrieval, our very first transfer. And we were just so excited. So the next step related to this is that you need to go in 2 days later for another blood test to make sure your hormone levels and what they're testing for is HCG is doubling, because in the very start of pregnancy, your levels should be doubling. And at this point, you would be considered 4 weeks pregnant already, because the way pregnancy is calculated, for those of you that don't know, it goes off of your last missed period. So you're actually considered 2 weeks pregnant before you're ever pregnant. So 2 weeks after our transfer date is actually 4 weeks. So at this point, we're 4 weeks pregnant. We go in for the second blood draw, super excited, and our levels are still at the level of pregnancy, but they haven't doubled. So what that means is, and I didn't know any of this, I was still on cloud 9 and so happy to be pregnant, is that there's typically something wrong with the pregnancy, that most likely it will not be a viable pregnancy. And so at this point, we're super concerned. Like, what's going on? What happened? We just got this great news on cloud 9, and then it's like, oh my gosh, we're plummeting back down to earth. At this point, they can't say definitively what's happening. All they can say is that you need to come back in 2 more days for another blood test. So from the high of being pregnant for like literally two days, no exaggeration, to getting the call that something is potentially wrong or even likely wrong, we're just, you know, staying prayed up, believing all of that this is going to be happening, asking God to watch over and protect this little baby that's trying to grow inside of us. Going for the next test, and the levels are still higher, but they're nowhere near doubling. They're barely increasing. So have to go back in every 2 days for a couple of periods and check the tests and see what our body's doing. Ultimately, the levels start to go down, and it's deemed what they call a chemical pregnancy or a chemical miscarriage is what some may call it. And so what that means is that technically we're pregnant. We have the levels for pregnancy, but it never got to the stage to be seen in an ultrasound to like actually prove it exists, so to speak. So it's considered like you were chemically pregnant, but never got to the point of being able to see an ultrasound. So basically right before 5 weeks, we got that news and we were devastated. I'm saying all of this in a matter of fact tone because I'm trying to explain to people who may be listening of like what the process is like and what you can expect for IVF with the stimulation and with the retrieval. And I think I'm probably doing that intentionally, being very matter-of-factly, not because, you know, I don't want to help people, because I definitely want to help people and I want to give you all of the information. But honestly speaking, matter-of-factly, it's needed, because this situation was devastating. Like, that's the only word I can use to describe it, honestly. To go from all of the anticipation for what you have put your blood, sweat, tears, and money into, and just in hopes that it works and getting the good news that it works, to find out the devastating news that it didn't quite work, it was hard. Super, super, super hard. But as hard as it was, or hard as it is, it's my story. That's what happened. We had a successful stimulation phase. The numbers we got, the 11, then the 10, then the 3, and the 2, were considered successful. Every checkpoint was successful. My body did exactly what it needed to do. My uterus lining looked good. My blood work looked good. Everything looked good. Ultimately, got the positive pregnancy test, but then realized it wasn't going to be a viable pregnancy. So what I equate it to is we got first down after first down after first down and got into the end zone and somehow dropped the ball. every step of the way we got positive news until the ultimate one. But the silver lining in all of this, and I do believe everything happens for a reason, and that God's plan is the best plan. We just don't understand it. And believe me, I struggle with understanding it. Is that the way in which it happened, it was a short period of time with the good news. There are plenty of people who make it so far along in their pregnancy and then get the news that it's not viable. They miscarry, they have a stillbirth. I have friends who have stories that would literally make you cry. That wasn't my story. So I'm thankful for the way in which it happened because it was quick and it allowed me to come to some level of acceptance with it. So where we are today is that we still, that was our one embryo of the two that were healthy. And so we have another embryo on ice. And so we decided we were going to jump right back into another frozen transfer cycle. So we're on the birth control, started on the birth control October 15th, came off of that after about 2 weeks, started the estrogen pills. One of the things that was different with this cycle is because we did have a chemical pregnancy and something went wrong, they added some medications. So also on a steroid, just in case I have any sort of inflammation or something autoimmune that's happening, I'm on a steroid pill every day, which not horrible to take, but good God, steroids, I have been so hungry ever since I started these. Like, I feel like my appetite is just surging. In addition to that, they also put me on a blood thinner, which is another subcutaneous shot, just in case one of the issues had something to do with blood clotting. So on those pills, had the baseline appointment, everything looked good. Went in actually today for the uterine lining check. Uterine lining was as thick as they wanted. They wanted at least a 6. We were at an 8.4, so it looked awesome. Blood work looked good. So we have the green light that tomorrow we will start the infamous booty shots. And then our transfer will be on Wednesday, which is November the 17th. So we are super excited about this, about going through it again. We've changed up the medicine a little bit to help with the success. So far, we had a healthy pregnancy before, a healthy baby. My body looks good at every stage. So we're hoping that this one is what comes out to be successful and that we have a healthy baby after all is said and done. And that's really our goal. At the end of the day, when we look back on this, whether it's 2 transfers, 3 transfers, whatever it is, we want the healthy baby in the end of it, and it'll all be worth it. So we're staying positive, believing in God that we know He wants to expand our family. We know it. We believe it. It's just a matter of how and when. And I struggle with that part based off of our last experience. And I'll share kind of that struggle and how I overcome it, because I have not overcame it, to be honest. We'll share that in another episode. So that is pretty much our IVF journey to date. It's not done yet, but I wanted to start this podcast and I wanted to start talking about some of these experiences as I was going through them. So this one will be a little bit behind, but my hope is that I can share this and start to do it a little bit more live action. So by the time I do another podcast and talk about what's happening, I will have had the transfer, and it'll probably be somewhere in that 2-week window where I fill you guys in on where we are. So those of you who are out there, I'm sure just kind of listening, those of you guys who have struggled, hopefully you've learned something about what the process is like. I'm definitely open to answering any questions that anyone may have about it. I'm pretty much an open book in many ways. And those of you guys who are listening and are supportive, and what you can do is just continue to pray for us, continue to encourage us, and send lots of positive energy our way. We appreciate it. We appreciate all of the check-ins, and we know there's a lot of people out there who care, and that goes a long way. So we really, 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 really do appreciate it. Let's see if there were anything else in my kind of notes about what we're going through. No, I do know a lot of people are interested in the expense of it. And like I talked about, the program we did includes 2 egg retrievals. And then however many eggs you get, unlimited transfers of those. So our first retrieval, we got the two good embryos. And so then we have two transfers because we're doing a single baby transfer. Our doctor does not do multiple because of the chances of having multiple babies and the increased risk of that. But plenty of doctors do two. So we're going to do two transfers. And then if we needed to, we would do another egg retrieval, and however many embryos come out of that, we would be able to transfer those. So that was the 27,000 that I referred to, which was crazy. In addition to that, you have several expenses. Like after the first transfer didn't work, we had to do a saline ultrasound. That was about $1,000 out of pocket. The next biggest thing is really the medications. During the stimulation phase, those medications for me, again, out of pocket, no coverage, were about $6,000 on top of that. And then when you get to the part we're in right now, the transfer phase, it's only a couple of hundred dollars. So let's say $300 there. But believe me, it all adds up, especially when you're talking about 27,000, 6,000, like 6 cents on top of all that is a really hard pill to swallow. So, if you see me out there tricking, it's like, no, it's not that bad. But it definitely is, you know, have to make some life adjustments in order to be able to do these big things. But again, nothing else is worth it more than this. So this little baby not only will have been prayed for and thought for and loved for before it ever exists, but it's like a freaking designer baby out here at these prices. But that just shows how much we love and we care and we really, really, really want this. So I want to thank you guys for listening and showing some love. The next couple of episodes will also probably be IVF focused because that's the biggest thing that's happening to me right now. And that's what I want to share. And as you recall, part of the reason for me doing this is therapy for me. So just talking and sharing is helping me. So as I wrap up, just want to encourage you guys, let's be someone's reason to smile today. Thanks.